We ended with the discussion of how many shifts, how many mishmaras there are at night. Machloikis, Rebbe and Rabbi Nosson. Rebbe said that the night divides into four mishmaras. Rabbi Nosson said that the night divides into three mishmaras. We showed psukim supporting each opinion. Lamaisa, we follow the opinion of Rabbi Nosson that the night consists of three mishmaras. Okay, I said the other night that there's deeper significance to this Gemara, that maybe we give a little bit of a sampling. I kind of changed my mind because, well, not completely. I kind of changed my mind because I was discussing it with a Chacham Echad, and I agreed with him. He said, don't teach things that you don't really understand. Don't teach things that you can't relate to. So I'm kind of dropping the idea. I wanted to just say what it says without really... There are a few levels of saying things that you don't understand. Sometimes things that you don't understand that you could still relate to somehow. And there are things that are completely above your head. I'm not going to show off. Yet, I do want to give a little bit of a perspective on this Gemara, a bit of a deeper perspective, just because that will help us in the coming Gemaras. We're going to be learning a whole sugya about David HaMelech. And there's a certain thread going through these Gemaras that already begins here. So we are going to go a little bit over our heads now. There's a midah called... Don't get scared off, okay? We're not going to do this all the time. There's a midah called midah of Malchus. Malchus, we all know, translates as kingship. We also know that it's one of the supreme midas of Hashem. If we'll just explain in a general way what this midah means, I'll give an example. If you throw flour, sugar, cocoa, and eggs together, you process it right, what do you get? You get cake. Is cake flour, sugar, water, and eggs? Or is cake another entity? Well, you could make an argument in either direction, right? You could say, no, cake is something else. Not all flour, sugar, and eggs mixed together equals cake. Sometimes it can just equal a disgusting mixture. Cake is what brings it all together to a new form. What is that form? It's all of it blending together beautifully. So really all it is flour, eggs, etc. But it's blended together beautifully. Is that called a separate entity? This is really the midah of Malchus. Malchus is a unifying factor that takes, it's really nothing in and of itself, but it takes a blend of different things, brings it together to form a beautiful picture, which didn't just automatically exist. For example, we'll spend a little bit of time, just very briefly, just to get the idea across, because we're going to see it's going to be a very interesting thread in the coming Gemaras. Why is that Malchus, the example of the cake? If you think about it, that's really what a king is in a sense. There are two elements to this. First of all, it's a unifying factor. Second of all, it's really nothing in and of itself. You have a carpenter. A carpenter is a carpenter even without anybody else around him. A king is nothing without a nation. Right? The whole essence of a king is that there's a nation. A king is nothing without a nation. It's the nation that turns him into a king. What's a kingdom? A kingdom takes a whole bunch of different things going on. There's a doctor's office over there, and there's a butcher shop over there. Each one is doing his own thing. Together they unite into one kingdom. A kingdom isn't really anything more than a whole bunch of different particles coming together. But now it turns into a kingdom. It's one entity. Take this a step further. I just want to drive the point home because I want this to be clear. It'll be very helpful to draw on in coming Gemaras, which will mean more to us. Shabbos is referred to as the Midah of Malchus. Why? What's Shabbos? Each day of creation contributed another something to the world. So at the end of the day you got a sun here, and you got a moon there, and you have plants here. But After the creation was completed, it came together into one interactive picture. That's what Shabbos is. Shabbos is when you see the whole picture. It's really adding nothing. Nothing was added, right? It's just all of it blending together into one picture. And the truth is that what happens then? Then the truth is that the greatness of Hashem shines through. When you see how it all comes together, the greatness of Hashem shines through. So again, Shabbos is also the Midah of Malchus. There's nothing, it's not a discrete entity, but by bringing everything together, it forms a new beautiful picture. And actually what Shabbos does is now it brings the glory of Hashem through into this world. That's the concept of the Midah of Malchus. So if we'll sum it up, there are two elements to it. First of all, it's a unifying factor. It brings it all together. Second of all, it in itself is nothing. Those are always the two terms you see used for the concept of Malchus. Unifying, Achdus, unifying, and to use Chazal's terms, Leitzlei Migamo Veloi Midi. It's got nothing in and of itself. That's true. Well, the difference between Shabbos and the king is that the king depends on the other people. Shabbos is really the effect of the creation. It's the creation that makes Shabbos. The creation throughout the 6 days is what makes Shabbos. But it depends. Shabbos without the creation of the 6 days is nothing. Shabbos is the culmination of the 6 days of creation. So Shabbos is to the 6 days what the king is to the people. That's the idea. Okay. Now, how this connects to... What's that? Malchus, right. The term Malchus is often used in connection with Shabbos. The Malchus part, right. Now you understand, by the way, why David HaMelech is connected to the moon. What's the moon? Moon's got no light in itself. It's simply reflecting the light of the sun. And it has that element of... It's got nothing in and of itself. Okay, I won't expound on this too much. I don't want people to come with pain and say this is a Gemara shir. Where are you going? Okay, I'll just briefly say how this connects to our Gemara of the Machloikis, whether the night is 3 or 4. And here we'll go a little bit more esoteric. One time deal, okay? A little bit more esoteric, and then afterwards we'll see how this mamish is going to have a lot of meaning for us in the coming Gemaras. Machloikis whether the night is 3 or 4 mishmaras. Okay, now I'm gonna say things now without completely understanding what I'm saying. You know that Malchus is the last of 10 midas, 10 supreme midas. What are called in many Sfarim the spheres. Right, familiar with the concept? You're looking at after spheres in spheres Haimer and Ma'ariv in the Siddur. Each one has Netzach Shabahoy, Hoychim and Netzach. Those are the last 7 of the 10. But there are 10 spheres. The 10 spheres are represented in the name Yud-Kei Vav-Kei. How? Just saying in a general way, again. This is very basic. But, meaning in the sense of, you don't have to worry that we're getting into waters maybe we shouldn't be going. These are things that Rav Shimshon Pinkus used to speak about all the time. That's how I know this. But, it's represented in the 4-letter name of Hashem. The tip of the Yud is the first Midah. It's Midah number 1. I'm not going to get into their names now. The Yud itself is the second Midah. The point being, the first Midah is where things first begin to become revealed. It's too small to see even. So the tip of the Yud is the first Midah. The Yud is the second Midah. The He is the third Midah. The Vav is the next 6. Why are they together? That's how it is. Don't ask me. The Vav is the next 6. The last hay is the last midah. What's the last midah? Malchus. Malchus we've been talking about. What it actually does is it brings together all the midas of Hashem, blends it all together, and presents us with the world that we have, which is really all the midas of Hashem coming together, all the different aspects of revelation come together That's the Malchus. Malchus presents us all the different meats blend together. Malchus presents it to us on a platter. That's the last pay of the name. Is it really a separate entity? We already said you can view it in two ways. You could say, well, it's a separate entity that brings everything together. On the other hand, you could say, there's nothing more here than the first nine. Or you could say, there's nothing more here than the first three letters of the name. Are there four here? Are there really four letters? Or is it three letters that are expressed through the fourth? Here we have a machlokes in the Gemara. If it's three, that's Rabbi Nassim. He doesn't really view the last hey. He says the night is represented through the name of Hashem. He doesn't really view the last hey as an entity. It's just bringing together the other three. It's really three. Rebbe says no. That hey is a mida in and of itself. It's a separate entity. There are four letters here. Now it just works. It works imperfectly. Rebbe was a descendant of David. David is the mida of Malchus. Rebbe wants to give him that entity. Okay, but now look at this in the Gemara. This is mamish, just astounding. After this whole preface, how does the Gemara express it? Shalosh mishmaros heve halayla, arba mishmaros heve halayla. Where it's still in the Gimel Amud Beis, in the middle of the narrow lines. What's that? No. So they're both in the same way. Heve halayla. Heve halayla. Here it doesn't say shalish, but it says in the earlier Gemara, shalish heve halayla. Would have been a little more normal, you might think, to say shalish mishmaris yesh balayla. Heve halayla. Heve ha is havaya. Already alluding at what the discussion here is. There's the heve, and then there's the hey, which they're both kind of presenting separately. That's really what the discussion is about. Is it all together? Is it separate? That's what's going on under the surface here. Okay, that's all. Don't kick me out. But the reason that I presented this is because even though what we said up till now is a little bit up in the clouds, we'll see soon how this is going to have a lot of meaning for us in very practical ways. Right now I just want to introduce that idea. Malchus is a unifying concept. The whole concept of Malchus is bringing together a blend of different elements to one form, one picture. And B, that in and of itself, it's nothing. It's simply just bringing out the beauty of everything that it's funneling. Okay? All right. Having said that, we'll move on, forget about it until we refer back to it. But now we'll move on. We're back on earth. Okay. We're going to begin the next sugya, kind of a bit of a digression from what we've been discussing up till now. The second wide line. V'amar Abizrika. This really has nothing to do with anything we've been discussing. It just comes in here because it's the same Chachamim said a series of statements, so we're presenting their next statement. Soon we'll get back to our subject. Amar Rabbi Zrike, Amar Rabbi Ami, Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. A new halacha. Ein oimrim bifnei hameis, elo dvorov shel neis. When you're in the presence of a dead person, you don't talk about anything that doesn't relate to the dead person. You only talk about issues pertaining to the dead person. What's the idea? Well, there are going to be two approaches onto exactly what he meant, and then we'll see what the idea is. But when there's a dead body, you talk only about the dead body. Omar Rabbi Abba Bar Kahana. Rabbi Abba Bar Kahana says, Lo yamon elo bedivrei Torah. All that means is, don't talk Torah when you're around a dead person. Avomili da alme, but if you just want to talk about mundane matters, want to discuss the news, leis lanba, that's okay. That's fine. The only problem is to talk Torah. Why should that be? So, he's understanding that the issue is that the dead person is conscious of what's going on around him, as we'll see in a later Gemara. Talking Torah in the presence of a dead person is the biggest ease that could possibly be. It's almost inhumane. We can't even relate to the greatness of what Torah is. Once a person is gone, died 2 minutes ago, all of a sudden he sees what Torah is, and what he would give to come back here and be able to talk Torah for just one more minute. And when the people around him are standing and talking Torah, it drives him nuts. The way the pasuk terms it is, Rashi brings this pasuk, it's like you're making fun of a poor man. There's a poor man, he has nothing, and you show him everything you have and say, look what I have, you don't. We'll get into that. What? Exactly, same idea. That's right. Now, so Stan just says, what if you're talking about the dead person? That's what Gemara said. You want to talk to great Torah, it has to be about the dead person. If you're eulogizing him, or something like that, it's for the honor of the dead person, that's fine. But not to just, you're here, it's going to take a while until things start moving, let's discuss the top. Go out of his presence and do it there. Also more than that, says that actually, when Chizkiyahu died, they established the yeshiva over his grave. Seems to go against what we're saying here, but no, it's the same idea. They did it lechavod him. It was an ilui neshama for him. That's okay. But to just talk Torah, you can't taunt somebody like that. So that's approach number one. The problem is only divrei Torah. And on the contrary, Rashi says, if you're just talking about the news, the dead man doesn't mind not being a part of it. Says it's not a disgrace to him. On the contrary, it's an honor for him not to be involved in the mundane talk. But others say no. That's not the idea. No. When we say, don't talk about anything other than him in his presence, we mean even divrei Torah. Certainly don't talk about mundane things. He's understanding the whole issue differently. He's understanding that it's an issue of respect for the dead person in his presence. Don't ignore him. If the dead person lying here, you don't go get involved with other things. So we're saying, certainly don't schmooze. You might think that since Torah is a mitzvah, it's okay. We're saying, no, even refrain from that. It's a completely different issue than the first version understood it. So there are two understandings about what the issue is. It's either not to tease him with the opportunities that you have. You have to come away from this with a very serious appreciation of what we have. We don't realize. In this world, we are rich people. We have everything available to us. The fact that you can just grab mitzvahs left and right is something you don't appreciate while you're here in the world of plenty. Once a person is gone, he appreciates it. We're a privileged minority. Most people are dead. I mean, since the beginning of history, right? It's only a small percentage of people that are alive. You have to appreciate the privilege you have. Take advantage. All the dead, huh? What's that? I don't know how that works. But the fact is that you're alive. Even if you're a Gilgul, the fact is that you can get mitzvahs. The fact that you're in position to get whatever mitzvahs you want makes you a very rich man. Okay. Now we'll move on. Certainly? Yeah, we're the minority. That's right. However you slice it, the live people are the minority. This is about Jews, right. Right. Okay. Now we're going to kind of get back to our subject. We cited Pesukim earlier when we were trying to determine whether the night has three or four shifts. We cited a couple of Pesukim relating to David HaMelech. One of them was, Chatzois Laila Okum Lohoy Deislam. I rise at midnight to praise you. Right? We cited that pasuk earlier. Now the Gemara says, is that so? David rose at midnight? V'David bepalge deleli avakoy? David rose at midnight? Me'urta avakoy? David rose from the evening. He started his daily schedule in the evening already. Diksiv, it says in the pasuk, ki damti baneshev, I would get up in the evening, v'hashaveah, and I cry out. So his daily schedule began in the evening. Why are we saying that he first got up at midnight? So the Gemara says, one minute. Which pasuk shows you that he got up in the evening? It says, ki damti baneshev v'ashaveah. I arose at neshef, and I cry out. Who said that the word neshef means evening? See what that word neshef means? Neshef means departing. If we're talking about departing in terms of time, we're assuming it means that the day departed, so it means evening. Well, who said that it means evening? Diksiv, because it says in the pasuk, the neshef be'erev yoim, in the departing, in the setting of the day. As the night gets dark. So yes, we see that Neshef means evening. Here in this pasuk we see it used for evening. But Neshef be'erev yoim, as the day sets and departs. So if so, we have a contradiction. One pasuk implies that David already got up in the beginning of the evening. The second pasuk says that he rose at midnight. So Omar Abba Ishaya, Omar Abi Acha. Hachiko Omar David. This is what David meant to say. When he said I rise at midnight, he didn't mean that that's when I first get up. You get up earlier. He's saying midnight never caught me asleep. That's what he said. But I was always up earlier. Mepharshim add that also sometimes he would sleep in the beginning of the night. Person asked to sleep. Well, we'll discuss that soon. But a person has to sleep. So he's saying sometimes I would get up at the beginning of the night, but I never passed midnight. So yeah, there were two levels. Generally got up at the beginning of the night, but never passed midnight. Rabbi Zeira Omar. Rabbi Zeira has a different way of resolving this. Ad chatzos lailo hayam isnamnim kasus. Up until midnight, he would sleep like a horse. Now that sounds derogatory, but it's actually the opposite. Have you ever watched a horse sleep? Horses don't sleep deeply. Horses take horse naps. Horses take short naps. They don't lie down. They stand on their feet. You see, probably seen it. They stand on their feet, they kind of doze, and they're up again. Doze again. So David never properly slept. He would say, up until midnight, I would kind of doze. But then from midnight and on, I would strengthen myself like a lion, and I would just engage myself in learning. So there's actually two elements to sleeping like a horse. First of all, it's quality-wise and it's also quantity-wise. Rashi says, horses don't fall deeply asleep. They sleep lightly. David HaMelech would doze like a horse, but he wouldn't fall deeply asleep, and he would be busy learning even while he was sleeping. Obviously, on a more superficial level, you're not able to think in depth when you're sleeping, but he would continue reviewing in a basic way even while he dozed. But that was only until midnight. Even that was only until midnight. After that, he was wide awake. That's number one. Number two is quantity-wise. Says that horses don't sleep more than 60 breaths at a time. And therefore he would also do that. Wouldn't sleep more than 60 breaths at a time. So he would have these short little cat naps. Even while he was dozing, he would be busy with learning. And that was until midnight. After midnight, he didn't allow himself even that. That's already when the full intensity of the schedule begins. Rav Ashi Omar. Rav Ashi says, no, there was no dozing at all. Ad chatzos lailo hayo oisek b'Torah. the psukim that indicate two different times is simply because he divided the night into two different times. He would get up in the evening, that was when he would start his schedule, and he would learn Torah. Mikan ve'elach, and then chatzais, he would arise from his Torah to praise the shiros ishbachos. Then he would praise Hashem. What's that? So does this mean that he didn't sleep? So Ramami Pano seems to understand that that's what it means. I don't know what that means, but most of the Farshim don't understand that way. Most of the Farshim understand that all three answers are basically saying the same idea. Up until midnight was a bit more flexible. I would sleep if I needed to, if not. Even if I did sleep, I would doze. But that was a bit more flexible. Midnight was the time that he would get up with alacrity, and then he was already on full steam. That's the general understanding. He slept. Just very, very minimally. Dozed, short, and that's that. Okay. Now, it's just interesting to note. We see here, whatever it is, David had this big thing with chatzos. Right? Whichever teretz you're going with, at chatzos, that was when the full steam schedule started. Right? Never, there was no slack after chatzos. So, here also, the mefarshim and the poskim bring out the significance of chatzos as a very auspicious time, which David HaMelech actually turned into his thing, so to speak, and established that as a time of engaging in Torah. But just very briefly, just a couple of things that the Mefarshim say on this. Not so briefly. A couple of things that the Mefarshim say on this. First of all, it's interesting to note, the way that what the Ramchal says, David is actually the origin of the concept of Tikkun Chatzos. At that time it wasn't Tikkun Chatzos because there was no Korban. Today Tikkun Chatzos is about the Korban. But David already showed that Chatzos is a time that you're meant to be busy with Hashem. The Ramchal says that actually, we know that, like we said the other day, Avraham Avinu instituted Shachris at the beginning of the day. Yitzchak instituted Mincha at midday. Yaakov, Ma'ariv at the beginning of the night. David was actually instituting a fourth tefillah, the Chatzos tefillah, at midnight, in order to have the whole day evenly distributed. Just, that wasn't actually put down as a chiyuv. That's how the Ramchal puts it. It's the fourth tefillah of the day, so to speak. Just it wasn't actually put down as a chiyuv. It's only for the pious. Anybody could decide to be pious in this sense. But it's for the pious. That's what David actually set down here. It says, you know, that David was actually considered the fourth of the others, right? Like I said, David was the fourth wheel of the chariot. That's what we see in other Gemaras. But the Mefarshim go on to talk about the importance of the time of Chatzos. If you are up these days, Chatzos is 11:25, something like that. So we're not talking about being up till 2 or waking up or anything very exciting. It's kedai to be aware that Chatzos is a time of very big significance. It says in the Mefarshim, this is brought from much earlier sources in the Zohar, that at Chatzos, Hashem comes to, so to speak, to play with the neshamas of the tzaddikim, meaning to have a good time with them, to spend quality time with them. That's what happens at Chatzos. Anybody in this world is welcome to join. You can join by learning Torah at Chatzos. That's why actually the way it's set up in Halacha is, this is Mishnah Berurah already, this is not Kabbalah. Okay, this is Mishnah Berurah. If you say Tikkun Chatzos, you time it that you finish Tikkun Chatzos at Chatzos. After that, you learn. Even if you're not going to be up till morning, you're going to go to sleep at 11:30, at Chatzos, you learn something. Then you're joining with what's going on up in Gan Eden, where Hashem is spending quality time with the tzaddikim. You are tapping into that. And this was actually laid down by David HaMelech. Okay. Now the Gemara moves on. It So we had started with an ambiguous pasuk that implies that somebody needs to wake up in the evening. Kidamti baneshev ba'ashaveya. I get up in the neshev and I cry out. So the Gemara brought a pasuk that implies that yes, that means evening, and we moved on. But now the Gemara is going to back up and say, wait a minute, does it really mean evening? The neshev utuhu? Does neshev really mean evening? Haneshev tzafruhu. I'll show you a different pasuk where you see that neshev means morning. Iksiv says in the pasuk also about David HaMelech. Vayakein David mehaneshev ve'ada erev lemachar asam. David smote them. This talks about one of David's words. He smote them from the morning until the evening. Sorry, from neshev until the evening. In context, if you talk about somebody doing something from neshev till evening, it sounds like morning till evening. Right? My love, does that not mean mitzafra ba'adelia? That he smote them from morning until evening? So the Gemara says, like, no, neshev means evening. And when it says that he smote them from neshev till evening, it means me'urte va'adurte. He smote them for 24 hours from evening to evening. So the Gemara says, no. I'achi, if that's the pasuk's intent, lichtoiv me'aneshev ve'adaneshev or me'arev ve'adarev, it should say either from neshev to neshev or from evening to evening. If the pasuk is trying to convey that he smote them from evening to evening, use the same term. Pick whichever term you want. Use erev, use neshev. But if it's from evening to evening, you should use the same term. So rather, no, it's clear in this pasuk that neshev until erev means morning till evening. So if so, here we see the meaning of neshev is morning. So elo marava, rather, Rava says, you know what, you're right. Neshev means evening and neshev means morning. There are two neshevs. Again, we said that really the word neshev means to depart, to go away. So it can mean both. It can be used for both. Noshaf leilye va'osi yimame. The night departed and the morning arrived. Noshaf yimame va'osi leilye. The day departed and night arrived. So yes, it could mean both. Okay. Now we're still not finished with David HaMelech and his chatzos. But I just want to bring out another very interesting insight in the Gemara that we just saw. According to the last answer, David used to learn Torah in the beginning of the evening, and he would engage himself with praising after chatzos. Because again, it's based on two psukim. Kidamti baneshev ha'shaveya, I would get up in the evening and cry out. And at midnight I would thank you. Now, the pasuk that says that he started at evening says what? Kidamti baneshev ba'ashaveya. I would arise at evening and cry out. Cry out is tefillah. How does Rav Ashi explain that to mean Torah? It says that when David said that he would arise in the evening and cry out, it means that he learned Torah. Crying out is not learning. Crying out is davening. How do we get from there to Torah? What? Tehillim is not Torah. I mean, it's part of Tanakh, but it's not called learning Torah. On the contrary, the Farshim infer from here that Tehillim was authored after Chatzos. That was what he was busy doing after Chatzos. So, how does Tefillah become crying? How does Torah become crying out? So, Reb Tzadik of Lublin says something very profound. Torah, he says, is a form of crying out to Hashem. It's a form of shava. Again, what's the term used here? Shava. Shava is an expression of tefillah. Why? What does the word shava mean? So the word shoyeh. Shoyeh means to turn to somebody. When you are mishavea to Hashem, you are begging Hashem to turn to you. You're trying to get Hashem. You're trying to get Hashem's attention. You're trying to get Him to turn to you. The person learning Torah is doing that automatically. When a person learns Torah, he's automatically attracting Hashem's attention. And that's why he says, you often see in the Gemara the term used, Adam ha-koyrei ba-toyra. A person is koyrei Torah. He's reading Torah. Why is that expression used? Koyrei. He should say, a person is learning Torah, loymei Torah. Reb Tzadik says, when you talk about a person being kairei taira, it doesn't mean reading. It means kairei as in calling out. When a person learns taira, he's calling Hashem, and Hashem turns to him and joins him. That's what you're doing when you're opening a sefer to learn. Taira is in fact one of the most powerful forms of tefillah. By learning Torah, you're calling out to Hashem. He hears him, he hears himself, so to speak, being called upon, and he comes. Okay, now let's move on. So we said that David HaMelech used to get up at Chatzos. The Gemara has a problem with that. V'David miyav yoda palge delelia emas. David was able to pinpoint Chatzos. Right, that was how he had it set up. Until Chatzos this, after Chatzos that. He was able to pinpoint Chatzos. Hashta, look, Moshe Rabbeinu loy have a yoda. Even Moshe Rabbeinu could not pinpoint the precise instant of Chatzos. Except, because it says in the Pasuk, Kachatzos halayla ani yoytze b'tzoich Mitzrayim. Moshe Rabbeinu, when he comes and announces, predicts the Makkah of the Chayrus, he says, at around Chatzos, Hashem said, I'm going to emerge in Mitzrayim, I'm going to go out of Mitzrayim. So you see that David wasn't, Moshe wasn't quite sure how to pinpoint it. So, my Kachatzos, what did he mean when he said, at around Chatzos? Was he simply conveying what Hashem said? Hashem said at around Chatzos, and Moshe conveyed that. Would Hashem not be clear when Chatzos is? Hashem wouldn't say around Chatzos. Hashem would say Chatzos. There's no question that Hashem said, I am going to go out of Mitzrayim at Chatzos. So since Moshe couldn't pinpoint Chatzos exactly, so he didn't say at Chatzos, because he wouldn't be able to pinpoint it. He said around Chatzos, because he wasn't sure of the precise moment. So if so, you see that Moshe was insecure about pinpointing Chatzos. He couldn't identify exactly when Chatzos is. So Alma Misabkele, you see that he didn't know. But David have a yoda? And David did know when Chatzos was. Moshe was couldn't confidently say when Chatzos is. David did. And the Gemara answers, you're right. David couldn't either pinpoint Chatzos. So how did he rise exactly at Chatzos? David Simone Havale is the famous idea. David had a sign of Chatzos. The Omar of Adabar business. Omar Rabbi Shimon Chassida. Rabbi Abba Bar Bizna said in the name of Rabbi Shimon Chassida, Kinor hayatolui lemalam in Tosei Shal David. David had a harp hanging over his bed. Vekivan shigia chatzos laila. And at the moment of midnight, bar ruach tzvoinis, a northern wind would blow. There's a certain northern wind that blows at midnight. It would blow on the harp, and the harp would blow by itself, would play by itself. So he would hear the harp playing, he would get up and learn Torah. So in other words, you're right, David could not pinpoint Chatzos on his own, but he had an alarm clock. He had this harp, and the natural winds that Chatzos would play on the harp, that would wake him up. And that's how he knew when Chatzos was. Okay. I just want to add something here. Because there's a lot of significance to this idea of David with a harp at Chatzos. Get up at Chatzos, you hear the harp playing, you'd get up, you'd throw himself into learning and praising Hashem. So first of all, we all picture, when we hear about David with his harp, it fits in well with his purple royal garments and his crown, and he's sitting on a throne with a harp. David was doing this when he was a poor shepherd, when he was a persecuted person. It was always the same schedule. He had his harp, Even when he was on the run, hiding somewhere in the wilderness, he had his harp right next to him. Even then, after a day of fleeing, he's an exhausted fugitive. Finally, he lies down to sleep somewhere on the rocks. He's got his harp right above his head. As soon as the winds would blow, David's up and learning. Exactly at Chatzos. There's a lot of significance here. What is Chatzos? David was very into Chatzos. You know why the Mepharshim say? Chatzos signifies the epitome of blackness. It's the most depressing time there is. It's furthest away from any form of light. Right? Far from the morning, far from the evening. It's blackness. It's a depressing time. David HaMelech had a lot of such moments in his life. A lot of hard times he went through in his life. He went through a lot of chatzoses. But yet, the truth is that when the night hits its peak, when the blackness reaches its peak, that's when it's already moving towards the morning. Right? So David HaMelech used the harp. What is the harp? What's music? Music, remember we talked before about Malchus? Taking a bunch of unrelated things and putting them together into one picture. Music is a bunch of different notes and a bunch of different instruments. Let's say you take a person, and a person says, "Woman, I'm an organized type of guy. You play for me a symphony, it's confusing. There's this confusing mix of strings and pianos and this and that. I don't like it that way. I like it set up neatly. Set up the symphony differently. Instead of everything mixed together, how many times does the piano hit G? Let's have that at once. Then how many times the piano, each note and each instrument separately. I want to hear all the G's of the piano, then all the E's of the bass, then all the F's of the saxophone. I want it organized, neat. If a person hears a symphony played that way, there's nothing to it, it's just annoying. Or we'll ask another question. The person says, "Oh, minute, again, I want to analyze each element of this. I want to see if it's really so beautiful. One note at a time." They come, we play the bass for him, one note. A very deep, annoying, jarring, right? So David says, "What do we need this for?" Not David. The person says, "What do we need this for? This is not beautiful. The symphony is beautiful. Get rid of this. We don't need this." So 1 minute. The whole beauty of the symphony is seeing it all come together. You're right. If you're going to hear all the G's at once, and then all the F's at once, of each instrument separately, there's nothing beautiful here. There's nothing to it. Hear it all come together. See how it all fits into one picture. Then there's beauty. David HaMelech went through life like that. David HaMelech knew that anything that happens to him in life is one note in a symphony. And therefore, those points of pitch blackness, he didn't just say, "Hey, there's a chatzos, there's a midnight here, it's black, what's going to happen?" That's one note of the bass, it's the bone-jarring bass. Okay. Or the cello, what is it, what is the heaven? Okay, but I know that it's part of a big picture. It's part of a music, it's part of a whole musical arrangement. I want to see it all come together. And therefore, yes, he had his harp playing for him at chatzos. Everything is part of a harmony. Even the worst times of life are really just part of a harmony. When you see it all come together, you won't see it in this world. You see it all come together, you see how it's really just one beautiful symphony. The truth is, the Mepharshim also bring out that actually it's those times, those blackest times, that we're seeing now, like we're seeing here, that's the times that are most conducive to getting close to Hashem. Davka Chatzos, the blackest time at night, is when we say, that's a great time to connect to Hashem. Hashem is there, He's ready for quality time with you. Davka at those black times, that you can gain immense closeness with Hashem, if instead of just falling, and getting dejected, you say, "I'm going to see through the blackness and connect to Hashem." Okay, that's about the heart. Let's move on. Now the Gemara, before we get back to this whole Chatzos discussion, we just mentioned his schedule, right? We wake up, the harp would wake him up, he would very energetically engage in Torah and learning until morning. What happened at morning time? At morning time, David HaMelech wasn't a private individual, he was a king. His responsibility was heading the nation. If he wanted any time for learning, it had to be before morning. Morning, he threw himself into his national responsibilities. So the Gemara gives an example of how one day in the life of David looked.
How did he function?
What's that?
How
did he function without sleep or with minimal sleep? That's a good question. The Mefarshim say that, we'll see soon, a pasuk that when he asks Hashem for special protection. Says he was asking because of the way he abused his body, he needed special help from Hashem. But yeah. Okay. Kivan Shaola Amud HaShachar. When the morning broke, they were already banging down his doors. Nichnesu Chachme Yisrael Etzloi. The Chachamim would enter Amulot. They said, Adreinenu HaMelech, our master, the king, Amcha Yisrael Tzrichim Panasa. Your nation, Klal Yisrael, they need Panasa. There are economic difficulties. Omer Lehem. So he said, L'chu v'isparnesu zeh mizeh. Okay, so let's get some business going. Let's initiate some economic reforms, some new business initiatives. Amulai, then ultimately they said to him, no, it's not going to work. Ein ha-kremetz masbi'a esari. A handful is not going to satisfy the lion. Ein ha-bor mismaleh michul yosai. Also, what are you trying to do? You have a pit, you want to fill it up. So you say, I got a great idea. I'm going to take soil from the pit, I'll dig soil, and I'll fill up the pit with it. You can never fill a pit with its own soil. We need external resources. Omar Lohem, so he would tell them, L'chu upishtu yedeichem bigdud. Okay, so if so, we have to conquer some nation. We'll get their money. So miyad, so the next step would be, Yoyatzim ba'achitoifa. They have to plan a battle campaign. So what were the steps of planning a battle campaign? First of all, they would consult with Achitoifa. Benimlochim b'Sanhedrin. Then they would consult with the Sanhedrin. V'shalim b'Urim b'Tum. Then they would consult with the Urim b'Tum. What exactly is going on here? What are these three stages? So let's see. Omer Rav Yosef said, Maikra, where's the pasuk that this was the order? Iksiv, it says in the pasuk, V'acharei Achitofel, the order of things was, first came Achitofel, he's the one who had planned the strategy. He was the one who they consulted with strategically. They told him, we need to plan a battle campaign. He would work out the campaign. He was the genius, he was the mastermind. He would plan the campaign. Then, Benayahu ben Yoyada, the next address was Benayahu ben Yoyada. We'll see soon. He was the head of the Sanhedrin. They would consult with them. Why? After they had a battle campaign, they would take it to the Sanhedrin, that to get a few authorizations. They would take it to the Sanhedrin, and the Sanhedrin would have to give a psak halacha. They would have to give a psak halacha whether, yes, we can allow this campaign to take place, whether it's too dangerous, whether the circumstances warrant the danger, that requires a psak. We'll elaborate on this. This is a very, very important point to note. Well, let's see. Evyasar, then they would go to Evyasar. Evyasar was the kohen. They would consult the Urim v'Tumim. This is already the Ruach HaKodesh stage. They wanted to know, will we succeed or not? The Urim v'Tumim told him that. V'sar tzvol ha-melech Yoav. And next was the general. Yoav was the general. He would actually implement the plan. So, yeah, they had Achitofel plan it, the Sanhedrin would okay it, the Urim v'Tumim would let them know if it's going to work, and then Yoav would actually lead the war. Now the Gemara elaborates, Achitofel ze Yoetz. Achitofel was the advisor, meaning he was the one who planned the strategy, he was the mastermind. The Chenu Oina, it says, listen to this, do you want to understand this quite who we're dealing with. The counsel of Achitofel that he would give in those days, Ka'asha Yishal Ish Bidvar Elokim. they attributed it the same weight as if a person would actually consult with the word of Hashem. When Achitofel gave counsel, they treated it with the same with reverence of Nevuah. Now when the Pasuk says that after him the next address was Benayo ben Yoyada, Zeh Sanhedrin, that refers to the Sanhedrin. See again, when you take the Jewish people out to battle, you need a Pesach of the Sanhedrin. You're dealing with wives of Jews. That's something that can't be decided on the discretion of David HaMelech, not on the genius discretion of Achitofel. You need the full convention of Sanhedrin. You need all of them to sit and paskin. The paskining on Jewish lives, is this warranted according to halacha? You need to know what halacha says about these things. It's a scary thing. When you think about when you sometimes wonder what discretions is made nowadays when Jewish people are sent to battle. It's a scary thing to think about. Are they using the discretion of halacha? What are the factors that they're using? What are the considerations? Is there anything political to it? Are there sometimes considerations of personal ambition on the part of those making the decision? Are, even if they are viewing it objectively, are all the considerations right? Maybe. I'll give an example. Something not personal motives. Back in Entebbe, when the cabinet got together, so actually, the plan to actually go ahead with the military operation was a last-minute plan. Initially, they were ready to negotiate. They wanted to negotiate with the terrorists, and they were going to free terrorists in order to do that. Rabin was the prime minister at the time, and he was ready to negotiate, and Begin, who was the head of the opposition, fully backed him. And then Peres got up, the master of discretion and Jewish sentiment. So he got up and he said, ever the demagogue, he said, always had a way of, with words, does still today. He's got these great ways of putting things that really mean nothing or close to nothing. He said, if we negotiate and manage to release the hostages, the world will understand us, but they won't respect us. If we take going to a military operation, even if we're risking lives, the world won't understand us, but they'll respect us. There's an issue of national pride here. Yes, there are lives at stake. We might lose a few, but there's a big issue of national pride here, Peres said. That's Peres. That's the difference between a Peres and a Sanhedrin. They gave it to him over the head. That's what actually happened then. Rabin yelled at him and said, Begin, who's trying to inhibit everything I do, gives me full backing because he appreciates the Jewish life. And you're coming up with this? It was later that they ended up deciding that they have more of a chance to go ahead with a military operation, more of a chance of success, and they did it. But this was the initial stages of the development of what happened at Entebbe. So I'm just giving that as an example of, if national pride becomes an issue, a consideration against Jewish lives, you know we need a daven for the Sanhedrin back. Then we finish with Evyasar. That's the word in the Tumim. They would go to ask, okay, Lamaisa, we have the plan, we have the permission. Will we win? And yes, the Pasuk says, we'll stop here. We're in mid-sentence, but we'll continue. Sunday is a special.